Now, Genesis chapter 17 is another piece of the puzzle as far as the covenant that God makes with Abram, and then changes his name to Abraham. So I'm going to try to call him just Abraham from this point forward. So the land is expanded upon in this promise of this covenant. And there is more of an expansion of the promise as far as the, more clarity, I guess, is given, and more information. So let's talk about the land first. To Abraham's seed, God gave the land from the river of Egypt to the great river Euphrates. This is the first time in chapter 17, verse 8, that the land is given precise borders, and they are spelled out as opposed to Genesis 12:5. Walt Kaiser wrote in the Expositor's Bible Commentary, it's been pointed out that the borders of the promised land appear to coincide with those of the garden. And he says, compare Genesis 2:10 to 14. That may be or may not be, but that's what a lot of people have said. So now it's at 99 years old that Yahweh, and that's the Lord in this passage, verse 1, appears to Abraham and said to him, I am El Shaddai, walk before me and be blameless. This supports the notion that we spoke about on Sunday mornings from Exodus about the names. And he says, I'll establish my covenant between me and you, and I'll multiply you exceedingly. And he gives him the well-known description of that, that if you can count the stars in the sky, then you can count your descendants. Well, of course, that's not possible. We can't even see all the stars, let alone count them. I'd get to a zillion, trillion, million, whatever, and I'd lose track, and I'd have to start all over again. It'd be a mess trying to count the stars, in other words. But this is 99 years old that God says this to him. Now, other things that happened when he is counted as righteousness is belief in the promise that God gives him. He's 75, and now it's 24 years later. It's not a long time to wait, but it's not an eternity. So why does God wait? Why does he make Abram wait on this promise? Well, I can't say specifically, but it seems to me that God is trying to show that this is even more impossible, that he would fulfill the promise to Abraham. And I think that Abraham shows the greatness of it when he falls down before the Lord. In verse 3, Abram fell on his face, and God talked with him. And he says, behold, my covenant is with you. And Abram also has his name changed at that point in time, and there's more specific information given that God tells Abram, walk before me and be blameless. Tamil, it means to be complete or faultless. And this is certainly not sinless by any means, but it is not necessarily a condition of the covenant, but a sign of the covenant. He's already in covenant with God, and he's already been, or had it accounted to him as righteousness that he believed the promise. So this is the fruit that follows the root of a relationship with God. Walk before me. To walk before him is to walk as if he is the one who's the audience. Walk before me. Do this before me. Act this way before me. God is the audience, and Abraham should realize that God's watching everything he does, and that colors everything that a person does in a positive way. And that also leads to this idea of being blameless. The desire that one has as a person connected with God is to please God, to walk before Him, and be blameless. So this is not a condition of the covenant. It's more a sign of the covenant or an identification that he's in covenant with God. Changes Abram's name from exalted father, which is what Abram means, to a father, or rather to father of a multitude. And with good reason, because he tells him, I'll make you the father of a multitude of nations. Now, sometimes words confuse us because nations is goyim, and there are no Gentiles at this point. Abram is a Gentile for all intents and purposes. He's the one man who was both a Gentile and a Jew. But that comes later. Israel comes later, and only through Abraham does that come. So I don't know if you want to make a lot of distinction between this word nations in verse 17:5c, if I'll make you the father of a multitude of nations. He says, but your name shall be Abraham, or father of a multitude, and I will make you that. I give you this name, and then it's going to come to pass. So people, again, is goyim. It's plural. It means people, not necessarily Gentiles. So some people make more hay out of that word than I think they ought to. At this point in time, in the context, it's, I'll just, make it so that there's a lot of people, not necessarily nations, at this point. I'm sorry about that, but I just want to make sure you understood. And some people might say, well, this is a promise for Abraham to be the father of many nations. Well, I don't know how to take that, actually. And he's not the father of just one nation. Well, he is the father of many nations. From him come a great many people, and from him also comes Israel. But the promise only comes through Isaac, and that's important for later. But he says, kings will come from you. Maybe he means Israel's kings, or maybe he means more than Israel's kings, or is God again only speaking of Israel? In Genesis 12:2, he says, I'll make you a great nation. And here he's made the father of a multitude of nations and kings. And so you have to kind of hold on, I think, to see how this plays out before you can make a decision. The covenant, however, is an everlasting covenant. It's not just a couple of years or his lifetime. It goes on throughout eternity, and eternal, or it's eternal. It's an everlasting covenant. Now, the land of Abraham's sojourning is also given to the seed. So that's part of this being an everlasting covenant. Then circumcision is an everlasting sign of the covenant, of this unique relationship between Abraham's seed and God. That's another addition to the covenant, or something that we're not told until now. Circumcision, as I am told, is fairly common practice in the ancient Near East, and yet it was never given this significance. It was done for other reasons, in other words. So all the males in Abraham's household are supposed to submit to it, or else they are going to be cut off. In other words, they're going to die prematurely and mysteriously. So this becomes pretty important. So as painful as circumcision is, there would be an even greater pain if they did not keep the covenant. And so these are significant things that people need to pay attention to, but the promises become even more incredible as we go. And Abraham and the others are to be obedient, every male in his household, regardless of them being of his genealogy, were supposed to be in, were supposed to carry the sign of the covenant in their bodies. When we think about that for a moment, here's a precursor, people not necessarily genetically connected to Abraham, but yet they're part of the covenant between Abraham and God. And that could be a talking point that we go off on, and I don't want to at this point because we'll run out of time. I'd rather have a discussion with you about it than I would try to tell you exactly what it means, because it's really a pretty vague, I think, in lots of ways, but it's specific in others. So Sarah's name is changed. Sarai is changed to Sarah. Now, both names mean princess. Sarai is an alternative pronunciation to, or Sarah is an alternative pronunciation. But I think there's something more going on here. She's told, besides the name change, that she will be the bearer of the seed. So this promise that God made to Abram at the time, is more specific. It is coming not through anybody else but her. Hagar's son, Ishmael, is not the one. So she and Abraham are going to have a child. This is, 24 years later after the promise, more specific. God even names the child. His name is Isaac, which means he laughs, which I think is similar to God the Father naming the Lord Jesus specifically. Mary isn't, and Joseph aren't given the opportunity to name the child. Now, does the he and he laughs refer to Abraham or to God? Some people take it both ways, I guess. But either is appropriate and it fits well. Abraham does laugh, but his laugh is spontaneous and is not rebuked here. When God tells him about this, I know that God knows why we do things or why it is that we react in a certain way. Now, some things are just plain wrong, but some things are ambivalent, and that's where this laugh comes in. This could be explained as the laugh of joy or gladness at the announcement to a man and a wife who are very advanced in age and being told that they are going to have a son when this is their greatest desire. You see that this, God says in the beginning of this chapter, he's going to multiply Abraham and he's going to bless him. I'm going to be to you the one who gives you very, very much, and as far as all kinds of possessions are concerned. And Abram says back, this shows his attitude. What good is that? Why, I'm just thrilled that you're going to do this for me, but who am I going to share it with? He goes immediately to the talk about his only having an heir, and I'm really referring to chapter 15 here. He says, okay, you're a shield to me, and my reward will be great, but what good is that? I don't have anybody to share it with except my wife. And all these people, of course, but I mean, I don't have anybody to pass it down to except somebody who's not of my genealogy. My servant is going to get this stuff. So he shows that he's concerned about this to a huge degree, and now he laughs when he's told that this one that's promised, this son, the child of promise, is coming through Sarah. Perhaps Abraham is thinking of what it's going to be like to display such a miracle later to anybody who sees and he shows the child to. A great joy is, I think, being shown here. So Abraham is also a man who trusts God for this too. And that's whatever God does gives him joy. But Ishmael is excluded very clearly in the text. He's not the one. Now, Abraham would later marry Keturah and have sons after Sarah is gone. They also would not be the ones through whom the blessings of the covenant would be realized otherwise. Regardless, all of them are going to be circumcised and identified with the covenant. And, you know, there's a whole lot more that we could say at this point. And things become even more interesting as we go on. But this is the basis. This birth forms the basis for the covenant and the pathway to Jesus Christ in the future. And through whom the blessing will come to all nations everywhere. And he is the one ultimately who is being spoken of, and all of salvation history is being set up in this way, in this covenant with Abraham. Things definitely become much more interesting, and God will make Isaac into a great nation, and that, of course, in Genesis 17:20 refers to Israel. He is a great people, as again the statement there, but it's singular, a people, not peoples. So take that for what it is saying and try to make sense of it from there. But I'm not sure exactly how all of this works out. I mean, I'm not saying I don't know history and I don't know what happened with Israel, but there seems to me to be more importance here than we realize. There's more to it than just what you read on the page. And in watching history and studying history, we can perhaps go back into the promise and see that this is exactly what God said from the beginning. And that's what I love to do. And that's what I think will always help people to trust him even more. But this is such an important topic that the Lord makes this covenant with Abraham, and he keeps that promise throughout history. And that's why he deals with Israel as he deals with Israel. And it is, for that reason, one of the most important things we can study. Well, I'll leave it at that and say to you, as I always do, and meaning it without any equivocation whatsoever, Numbers 6:24-26. I don't know if I ever told you where it was. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace. I'm looking forward to Easter this Sunday. Pray that you can be there. Pray that the entire service will bless you, draw you closer to the Lord, help you to walk before him in a way that is upright and blameless. That's our prayer.